for truly radical progressives. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ.
Yeah, welcome to the weekend. It is time for the Russ Belville Show, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, coming at you live and direct from the upper left corner of the free speech zone that we call America, right up here in the great Pacific Northwest, Portland, Oregon. Glad to have you here. We are live, and glad to be live again. We'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. Plenty of stuff to talk about today. Of course, sad death of Tim Russert just yesterday. The Supreme Court makes a decision on habeas corpus. McCain displays his IT ignorance. The GOP blocks an energy bill. And as usual, we'll be running down the lunatic fringery going on the right wing on the radio and TV dial. Hey, it's great to be here. Glad to have you here. Also, we're always glad to have our favorite immigrant worker, the man voted most likely to fill a lorry with petrol on his way back to his flat for biscuits and tea. It's Stevie Lee on the board.
Thank you so much, Double R. It's so glad to be here. I'm so glad to be here myself.
Hey, we got to let our regular listeners know what the heck is going on here, because last week I had promised. I had said, you know, I'm going to Aspen, Colorado for this conference, and we'll come at you live from Aspen. And if you were listening last week, we didn't. we didn't come at you live from Aspen. And I just got to tell folks out here, you know, you're listening to the radio, you're listening to XM Satellite, and you're going, wow, the marvels of technology and the satellites and the inner tubes and the Google and all that. I got to let you know that the Russ Belville Show here, we are the little engine that could of talk radio, okay? we definitely do not have your Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity-style budgets here. In fact...
we're sort of the 50 million rupee, man.
50 million rupee or rubles or something
exactly.
That. So we got this set up where, you know, I've got my studio here where we come at you from Portland, Oregon, but when we go on the road... We got this technology that hooks up into phone lines and allows us to connect to the great satellite world out there. And we called the hotel in Aspen and said, hey, do you got a phone line that'll work? And they said, yeah, we do. Sure. No problem. there was a problem.
What they didn't tell us is that every time you dial the studio from this hotel, every 30 seconds it goes, pay your bill!
Yeah, there was some sort of metering pulse on the phone line that would kick us offline every 30 seconds, so that wouldn't have made a very good show. So
yeah.
I apologize to everyone that was hoping for a live show last week. Definitely not what we wanted to have to do, but hey, that happens. That's America, and when you're living paycheck to paycheck like we are, you're just working class guys like me and Stevie, you make do with what you can.
That's it. You got your high gas prices, you don't get your Russ Belville Show, but as the Republicans say, hey, tough luck.
Tough luck. That's right.
But we don't say that. That's why we're here, to give you an extra good show this week.
That's right. Extra good. And as usual, I know that a lot of you folks are really busy. You're like me. You got to work two or three jobs just to keep up with the $4 gas and the rising price of food and rent and all of that. So a lot of you don't have the time to catch up on the newspaper or the evening news. So I help you catch up on the latest news topics with...
The Week in 90 Seconds.
NBC News Washington Bureau Chief Tim Russert dies of a sudden heart attack.
We now know who the Democratic nominee is going to be, and no one's going to dispute it, Keith.
The Supreme Court upholds the writ of habeas corpus, even for terrorists.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
John W. McCain, what do you think about bringing our troops home?
No, but that's not too important. What's important is the casualties in Iraq.
Well, Senator McCain, the least you could do is buy him a beer.
I will veto every single beer.
Well, that's strange. Senator McCain, what internet tools are you using in your vice presidential choice?
Basically, it's a Google.
It's a Google. Hillary Clinton suspends her campaign and endorses Barack Obama.
And that is why I will work my heart out to make sure that Senator Obama is our next president.
Gas finally tops the average of $4 a gallon nationwide. Bush calls on Congress to not give our soldiers GI benefits.
Our men and women in uniform and their families deserve better than this.
Massive flooding strikes the Midwest. Fortunately for them, most people affected this time are white.
George Bush doesn't care about black people.
And tomorrow is Father's Day, so happy Father's Day to my dad, the rockin' Johnny B.
You know that's the same thing.
Aw, yeah.
That you told me, Lord.
That's my dad. That's the Rockin' Johnny B.
Is that your dad?
That is my dad.
Wow. That's cool.
Singing the old song, Ain't It Funny How Time Slips Away. I grew up on the road, basically. My dad's been a professional musician all of my life and most of his. And he plays bass now. He used to play drums. But, yeah, that's him singing. That's Friendly Henry on the guitar there, yeah. And they got a little country band called the Knights, and they play out in the Treasure Valley area of Idaho still. So still kicking it. Dad's what, 66 years old, and his guitar player is 72 or 3, I think. And they're still out there weekend after weekend playing the gigs, playing the music. So happy Father's Day, Dad. Thanks for making this all possible, making me the crazy radical guy that I am, and getting me on stage and in front of a microphone from a very, very early age. And happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
Yay.
Especially the fathers. Especially the fathers who have sons and daughters serving in Iraq or Afghanistan right at the moment. I know those Father's Days are the toughest. And, of course, a very special Father's Day wish and condolences go out to Big Russ, Tim Russert's father, who unfortunately in his 80s now has to attend the funeral of his son. And you know, what a shame. I mean, that whole Tim Russert thing, I was so shocked. I was busy working, and my wife kind of just called me on the phone and, you know, said, did you hear? And, you know, all my political life, all the years that I've been politically aware, you know, there was just one place to turn on Sundays, and it was going to be Meet the Press with Tim Russert. You just, you know, that's what you watched. That was, you know, the go-to guy. And for a guy to just, 58 years old, to just suddenly die at work like that of a heart attack, it's such a shame. And I feel really bad for his coworkers. I mean, imagine that you're at work with a guy who's been your boss for, you know, 10, 15 years, and just all of a sudden, you know, just like that. It really does show you just how tenuous our grasp on our mortality is, and I hope that reminds all the fathers and sons this year to make that contact and be close and tell your fathers and tell your sons how much you love them, tell your daughters how much you love them, because time is short, and we don't know when we'll be leaving this mortal coil. Now, let's move on to some more happy news, of course, here. We want to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court decision that happened just recently. The Supreme Court came back in a case to determine whether or not the detainees at Guantanamo Bay have the writ of habeas corpus. That is, do the rights of being able to challenge your detention in a court, do those rights apply to foreign combatants being held on non-American soil, which, of course, Guantanamo's down in Cuba. And this also goes to the act, the Detainee Treatment Act of 2006 that the Congress passed that set up all these, you know, kangaroo courts and all these, you know, crazy tribunals for these guys where they don't get to talk to their lawyers. And if they do get to talk to their lawyers, everything's overheard and you know, there's no secrecy, right? So the Supreme Court, in narrow 5-4 decision, did hold that the detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, have a constitutional right to challenge their detention in a federal court. So it's about time that this Military Commissions Act was struck down. You know, the Congress went way beyond their bounds by determining that the detainees there could be treated in an extra legal manner. You know, the right wing has such a problem with our courts. This is where it really gets down to, and you hear it in their rhetoric when they talk about the activist judges and the robed tyrants that are running the world and making gay marriage okay and all that kind of stuff. Well, they have this fundamental distrust of the courts, because in the conservative mind, you're guilty till proven innocent, and especially when we're talking about terrorists. You know, we're talking about the detainees at Guantanamo. Guilty until proven innocent is their idea. And they just figure, well, if these guys are the big bad terrorists, why do they deserve any sort of protections under our Constitution? And I guess the theory, I guess the mindset that they're working with here is the idea that, you know, big bad terrorists will blow up Americans, and then they'll get into court and get some slick lawyer who'll get them off on some technicality. That's my theory here as to what their mindset is. And I just get that from, you know, going back and talking to my relatives and friends back in Idaho, you know, very conservative friends back there, who basically give me that kind of idea that they just don't trust the courts because the bad guys can get off on a technicality. Well, if you're fighting for the American way of life, and you're fighting for the American Constitution. Remember how the terrorists were going to take our freedoms? You know, they hate us for our freedoms. Then is the idea here that if you give the freedoms away, then the terrorists will leave us alone? Because that seems to be the idea here in the past 7 years of the Cheney-Burton maladministration, is if we just didn't have any freedoms, well, then they wouldn't bother us anymore. Well, I personally think that the American system of jurisprudence, the American system of courts, is more than capable enough of dealing with terrorist suspects. And when you look at all of the detainees being held in Guantanamo right now, and none of them have been charged with anything, you know, it seems to me that it's pretty specious that these guys have been picked up in the first place. A lot of these guys picked up in Guantanamo just happened to be the guys that were in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, they were putting bounties out on these people out in the early months of the invasion. They're putting bounties on these guys. And so, of course, you know, if you had a problem with your neighbor or a feud with another clan or another tribe, what better way to settle that feud than to have Uncle Sam take your bad guy away and pay you for it? That's what's going on down in Guantanamo, and you're going to hear a whole lot more about this as these cases start to go to trial. All right, now coming back in the next couple of segments, we got our big story. We'll talk about the Hillary voters for McCain and McCain's IT ignorance, as well as your calls at 866-55-77-377. I'm Radical Russ.
Working class and damn proud of it. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back to the show. Hey, guess what today is?
You're a grand old flag.
That's right. It's Flag Day.
Flag and forever in peace may you wait.
So, salute old glory and stars and stripes.
The land I love.
Because it is Flag Day today.
The free and the brave. Every heart beats true.
Jimmy Cagney, that's right. So, yeah, Flag Day today, so show the stars and stripes, show your pride in the American flag today.
All right.
Yeah, makes you want to talk like this, doesn't it?
It really does. Yeah.
Settle down now.
God, that's worse than the spam intro.
It's worse than the spam intro. Yes, it is.
It gets stuck in a repeating loop of agony.
All right, let's get right to it.
All right.
Now it's time for the big story.
Oh, my. What a big story you have.
Thanks. Now here's Radical Russ.
That's right. Our big story today is the Supreme Court upholding the writ of habeas corpus. We've got our rights back here in America, and specifically the detainees in Guantanamo Bay now have the right to challenge their detention in a court of law. Yes, the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 in a decision against the Bush White House that, yes, the Constitution cannot be suspended. In fact, Justice Anthony Kennedy wrote for the majority and said the Congress and the President do not have the power to switch the Constitution on or off at will. And of course, if we go back to our founding document, we go back to the Constitution, you can learn that habeas corpus can only be revoked, quote, when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. And, you know, the right wing here for a long time has been trying to peddle around that, trying to get every little sort of tweak and miscommunication and obfuscation to try to get around this simple fact that the Constitution says you cannot suspend habeas corpus unless you're invaded or you're in a rebellion. And they've tried to say, well, it's the war on terror. You see, it's the war on terror. These are bad guys. It's new times, new tactics. Constitution couldn't have possibly known, you know, what would happen with planes flying into buildings and such. But no, the Constitution's pretty clear. You cannot suspend habeas corpus except for a rebellion or an invasion. Now, this has been a law, the habeas corpus, the whole concept of it, has been around for over 8 centuries. This goes back to 1215, based on English common law, and was codified in the Magna Carta of 1215. Stevie, thank your kings for that. We appreciate that.
You're very welcome, I must say. Yeah. There was something else that I thought of as well. You know, being a student of the country that I now live in, my home, I regard it. My people were regarded as terrorists some time ago in a certain little war of independence that you had, and you whipped our little red-coated behinds. and we were regarded as terrorists, so yeah. You could actually say that the Constitution was written with this kind of stuff in mind. Because there is one person who actually stood up for the rights of British terrorists, and that person was John Adams.
That's absolutely right. Habeas corpus applied to the redcoats in Britain, you know, like you say, were considered kind of terrorists as such. Also, you know, we look to all of the cases in the American history throughout the Civil War and after Reconstruction, you know, when we had had bombings and lynchings and all of that, and all these guys committing, you know, what we now call hate crimes, but they're basically terrorist acts, right? You know, burning crosses and bombing churches and such.
Yeah, pretty terrifying to me.
Yeah, and the law seemed to work just fine for them. So, you know, this idea, the right wing, when you really get down to it, they're just cowardly on this issue. They're afraid that America's not strong enough and our court system isn't strong enough to fight against this new menace, as if these guys out in caves in Afghanistan are any more deadly or worse or more intelligent than all the terrorists we've fought for the past two centuries in this country. You only need look at their talking points that are coming across from the right wing, and I'm going to get you a few of them here on this detainee, this new decision. Rush Limbaugh, L. Rushbo, came out and said, "Now this is an abomination. This is just outrageous. Never before in the history of U.S. warfare have we had to go out and Mirandize prisoners of war." See, he's trying to paint this idea that, like, somehow we're going to be out on the battlefield and our generals and colonels and sergeants are going to have to stop every soldier that they capture, every enemy combatant they capture, and read the Miranda warnings to them. Well, guess what, Rush? If we'd have been treating these guys like prisoners of war, like the Geneva Convention says, they'd have been in military courts, and we wouldn't even had to come to this situation here, where they have to try to sue in a civil court. Had we just followed the rules that we'd been following since World War II, then we wouldn't even have this issue. Another right-wing gas bag, Hugh Hewitt, got on and said, "The Great Writ is open to the worst killers who have ever set their sights on the homeland." Well, first of all, that's kind of assuming they're all guilty, right? That everybody in Guantanamo is guilty. Again, that whole right-wing guilty until proven innocent idea. But also, the worst killers, really? Are these guys the worst? You know, the 9/11 hijackers or the terrorists, are these the worst killers we've ever faced? Yeah, I seem to remember a sneak attack at Pearl Harbor that killed a whole lot of people. You know, weren't they the worst killers we ever faced? The Nazis, they killed millions. Weren't they the worst killers we ever faced? Come on, to be so scared of these terrorists is to give them more power than they really have. Now, let's go on to Senator Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham had to say, "I cannot believe we're going to allow unelected judges who are not trained in military matters to make major wartime policy decisions." Unelected judges not trained in military matters. You mean like Justice John Paul Stevens, who served in World War II and voted with the majority? Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, so I'm afraid Justice Stevens has a little bit more military experience than you might have thought there, Senator Graham. And of course, the Justice Scalia in his dissent was just went crazy here. Don't have enough time to read you all of that one, unfortunately, but check out my website at radicalrust.com, and we'll have that information up on the site. You can check out the wild lunatic fringery of Justice Scalia on this circumstance. All right, well, coming up after the break, we're going to get to your calls also at 866-5577-377. What do you think about this decision? Are we making a mistake by giving the rights of habeas corpus to our enemies? Or is this just showing how the American system of justice can truly work, even in the 21st century? So we'll take your calls at 866-5577-377. And then after that, we'll talk about the lunatic fringe. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives.
Don't touch that dial. We're right back to Radical Russ in just a few minutes. Hey, does anybody really have a dial anymore? You're listening to the Russ Belville Show. Voice of the everyday American. It's time for Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back to the show, 35 after the hour.
Power to the people.
Let's turn things over to the good and wise people of North America and hear your voices. Stand up together and fight the power. Let our leaders know how you feel. That's right. It's time for the people to speak. The phone number here is 866-5577-377. Question of the day. The Supreme Court decision in the Guantanamo detainee case. The writ of habeas corpus does apply to enemy combatants in Guantanamo. What do you think of this decision? Do you think this is a bad idea that we're at more danger now? We're in more danger from terrorists because now they can go to court? Ooh, frightening, ladies and gentlemen. Also, I wanted to talk a little bit about John W. McCain here and one of his gaffes, because now that the whole Hillary Obama thing is over, we can go through and start concentrating on the Republican nominee. And of course, he's just chock full of gaffes. One of them here, he was on the Today Show this week being asked by Matt Lauer about the conflict in Iraq and the so-called success of the surge. And I think this clip just gives you a good look at John McCain's plans for the next, 100 years or so.
And a lot of people now say the surge is working.
Anybody who knows the facts on the ground say that.
If yes. It's working, Senator, do you now have a better estimate of when American forces can come home from Iraq?
No, but that's not too important. What's important is the casualties in Iraq. Americans are in South Korea, Americans are in Japan, American troops are in Germany. That's all fine. American casualties and the ability to withdraw.
So McCain here is still stuck in the 20th century, still stuck in this idea of American imperialism and us putting up our bases and occupying, well, I guess the rest of the world is his idea here. You know, he made the famous quote about being in Iraq for 100 years, if that's what it takes. And he keeps coming back to this idea that as long as we're not dying out there, as long as we don't have any casualties, it's okay if we stay in Iraq for 100 years. And he compares it to Japan and Germany and South Korea and all of this. Well, first of all, Mr. McCain, how much money are we spending in Germany, Japan, and South Korea every month? I'm pretty sure it's not $12 billion of our children and grandchildren's money that we're borrowing from China. I'm pretty sure that's not the money we're spending in Germany, Japan, or South Korea. Also, if we look at Germany, Japan, and South Korea, in each one of those cases, we were taking over in a situation that had already been resolved, an actual war where they had, you know, actual armies with weapons and military uniforms, where we could have a real peace treaty signed, where we could actually sign a treaty and sign a piece of paper to indicate that the war was quote-unquote over, and our troops came in to occupy already safe lands, right? Iraq doesn't even compare in this scenario, okay? We are not in safe lands. We're smack dab in the middle of a Sunni-Shiite civil war, and our remaining there is just making the situation worse. But, you know, this idea of McCain not getting the whole military thing, that bothers me, of course. It bothers me a whole lot that he's still seeing things in a 20th century Cold War tanks and guns type of situation, when what we're dealing with here is crime. We're dealing with terrorism, which is a crime. We're not dealing with a country or an enemy in uniform or any type of standing army. This is more of a fight against crime. And to try to throw bombs and money and guns and soldiers at it is not the way to win this fight. The way to win this fight is to give them less reasons to hate us, okay? Quit stomping all over their lands. Quit occupying their holy lands. Quit abusing their Quran. Propping up dictators in the Middle East who treat their people poorly. This is what's causing the war on terror that we're having. And throwing more guns and bombs and soldiers at it is kind of like throwing water on a grease fire. You're just going to make it spread and grow. And we've seen that over the past 7 years of the Bush maladministration. But that's one thing that scares me about McCain. Here's the other. We are going into a contest here in the 21st century, in a world run by the internet, in a world where the computer is the most promising and the most changing technological innovation that we have had in this century. And John McCain doesn't have a clue. He has no idea. This just came out. He was talking about, people were asking about his internet skills and his computer skills. And he basically replied, well, you know, I don't know that much about the internet. So I just let my wife take care of that. And boy, that just scares the hell out of me to think that someone who might be the leader of the free world, the president of the United States, would have no clue about the most technologically important situation, invention, and commerce in America since the invention of the internal combustion engine, for God's sake. I mean, this guy, he's absolutely clueless. Here was his quote. They were asking him about him searching for vice president and how they were going to vet his different vice presidential candidates. And check out his reaction here.
We're going through a process where you get a whole bunch of names and you go, look, basically it's a Google.
Basically, it's a Google. Basically, it's a Google. Yeah, that goes along with, you know, George W. Bush when he had this famous saying.
And one of the things that I've used on the Google is to pull up maps.
The Google. You know, one of the things he used on the Google was to pull up maps. And then, of course, the all-time ranking king of Republican IT prowess, Ted Stevens, the senator from Alaska.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Now, does this scare anyone that the leadership of one of the major parties in America is absolutely bereft of a clue when it comes to the internet, IT, cyberspace, computers? This is the 21st century, guys. I mean, not understanding computers and the effect of the internet on our daily lives, that's a major issue. I mean, imagine if we'd have gone into the turn of the 19th century, if we'd gone into the 1800s, facing the Mexican-American War, the War of 1812, the Civil War. Imagine facing all of that and having a president who had no idea what a steam engine was, who'd never seen a train, never seen a steam engine, didn't know what it was about, didn't know there were trains. I mean, can you imagine what our history would have turned out like? Or let's get even closer. Let's go to the turn of the 20th century, right? Let's talk about the turn of the 20th century, starting the 1900s. Imagine FDR running for president, facing, you know, right after World War I and facing the increasing hostility and buildup of the Nazis and the beginning of World War II. Imagine FDR in that situation not knowing what an internal combustion engine is. Imagine FDR thinking that everything was still horse and buggies. Right? That's how big this is to me, right? I mean, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just an IT guy and these things strike me a little funny, but the idea that the possible free leader of the free world wouldn't understand the internet or wouldn't understand computers, that just blows my mind. I just it's hard for me to imagine that. All right, one more thing I wanted to cover here. And again, don't forget, if you want to get involved in the conversation here, you can. Phone number here is 866-5577-377. One last thing here I wanted to talk about was the GOP just blocked the new energy bill. This was the Consumer First Energy Act. This got blocked this week on a vote of 51-43. And of course, in the Senate, you got to get 60 votes to get past the GOP filibuster threats. And that just kills me right there, is the fact that all they got to do is threaten it, right? They've got this gentleman's agreement that if we can't get 60 votes, we won't even talk about the bill. I think you ought to make these Republicans filibuster. I think you ought to, in the era of $4 gas, Harry Reid, I think you ought to get those Republicans and force them to filibuster. Force them to argue to the American people, live and direct on C-SPAN, why we don't need to pass an energy bill that does the following. First of all, it was going to tax windfall profits on the largest oil companies. You realize ExxonMobil made $1,300 every second last year? Yeah, $1,300 a second. In 2 seconds, Exxon made as much money as the average American worker in 2 seconds, as what we make in about a month, right? Yeah, so they didn't want that. They didn't want windfall profits on these oil companies that are making tens of billions of dollars in profit. There was also a provision to take back the $17 billion in tax breaks that Congress had given them. You realize that we're giving these oil companies tax breaks, right? Because they're hurting, right? Yeah, because they're making tens of billions of dollars every quarter, world record profits every quarter. And on top of that, We're giving them $17 billion in taxpayer money. Now, we were going to tax their windfall profits at 25%, and if they didn't want to pay that tax, all they had to do is reinvest their profits into alternative energy or refinery expansion. And on all of that, taxing windfall profits, taking our taxpayer money back from the big oil companies and trying to make the oil companies invest in more renewable sources of energy, the Republicans blocked all that, and it didn't even get play on C-SPAN because Harry Reid and the Democrats are fine with just the threat of a filibuster. I say bull. Get these guys on TV, force them to argue to the American people why we have to keep giving money to these oil companies and why in the era of $4 a gallon gas, they can't use their profits to help us get off of this oil addiction. It's ridiculous. It needs to stop right now. And when we get ourselves more Democrats in Congress in the next election, maybe we can make some progress on really turning to alternative energy. All right. Well, that's our Let the People Speak segment. Coming up in our next segment, we'll be talking about our Lunatic Fringe Awards. We got five Lunatic Fringers ready to go. And in the next hour, our special monthly interview with the Red State Update guys. Stay tuned. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Show. Not ashamed of his real last name. Got it, Michael Savage?
Hey, welcome back to the show. 51 after. Hey, before we get to the Lunatic Fringe, we got a quick call coming in here at 866-55-77-377. It's Dan from Youngstown, Ohio. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hi. You know, I just wanted to say that the 5-4 decision that the right is complaining about is the same decision that selected this fool that we had in the White House.
Ah, yeah. Thank you very much. Appreciate that, Dan. You're absolutely right. So,
That's really all I wanted to say, but keep up the good work. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Yeah, those 5-4 decisions really suck, don't they, Mr. Bush? All right, yeah, let's get right to it. You know what time it is.
The lunatic is on the grass.
Now it's time for our weekly roundup of the right wing's altered reality.
The lunatic is on the grass.
From the Guano Loco neocon chicken hawks to the hypocritical American Taliban and the cable news punditocracy, the Russ Belville Show presents
the
Lunatic Fringe Award, an award dedicated to the politician, pundit, or preacher who said the most bizarre, hateful, or ignorant comment of the week. Oh, we got a regular line up here, a few of these guys that we've heard from before, and one newbie. Let's get it started. We start off with Bill O'Reilly out there on the Fox Noise Channel. Bill O'Reilly was
talking... We'll do it live!
We'll do it live! Bill O'Reilly was talking about a report about 7 ninth graders at Passaic Valley High School in New Jersey who had been suspended for distributing topless photographs of their classmates. So these little middle school kids are sending around topless photographs of each other. And Bill O'Reilly thought that was a very interesting moral case, considering where these kids came from. Just check out this clip.
Well, bear in mind, some of these pictures were taken 2 or 3 years ago, and they surfaced now. But some of these girls were 11, so they could be perhaps understood as being a little more innocent or thoughtless. Some kids perhaps are looking for attention. Some see Lindsay Lohan doing this kind of thing and want to do it themselves.
It's an amazing amount of kids involved with this. 20 in an affluent school district. This isn't, the inner city. You would think that these kids would have some kind of a value system.
See, it's not like those inner city kids that don't have values or anything. You know, those inner city, those urban kids. You know what I'm talking about, right? Yeah, you wouldn't think these kids would have some sort of value system. Well, that's a remarkable way of looking at it, and just barely disguises the racism that we all know that Bill O'Reilly suffers from. So, unfortunately, Bill, that's so common for you, I can't give you the Lunatic Fringe Award for that one, but I will give you the Bill O'Reilly Key to the Ghetto Award.
MF-er, I want more iced tea.
Kiss my ass, bust the cap on the Moet, 'cause
because I don't want to hear that crap.
Yeah, there's your iced tea, Bill O'Reilly. All right, we move on to Monica Crowley, who was sitting in for Laura Ingraham the other day on her radio show. Monica Crowley was talking about Hillary Clinton and what was going to happen to all the politicos who went out and endorsed Barack Obama. And basically her theory is that Hillary Clinton and the Clintons, they have these long memories, and there would be dire consequences for anyone that crossed Hillary Clinton.
Too bad for you. You know, if you're backing the Hope guy, well, that's too bad for you. And it will be too bad for you because girlfriend will cut you. She will strap you into the electric chair. Then she will waterboard you. Then she will slowly and methodically pull off each one of your toenails. Then she will deprive you of sleep by blasting the best of the 80s hairbands at you. And then she will cut off your manhood. And then she will throw the switch.
Now, weren't we hearing a whole lot of complaint from Hillary's supporters about the sexism in the media and how sexist the media was here? And yet here you got this Monica Crowley, a woman who's going off about how Hillary Clinton will cut off your manhood if you cross her in the primary campaign. Yeah, unfortunately, Monica, I can't give you the lunatic fringe for that one, but I can give you the Bachelor Party Killer Pimp Award.
Girls, back in 45 minutes, or Milt cuts your balls off.
Yeah, watch out for Milt. All right, we're going to go to San Francisco at KSFO. There's a host out there named Lee Rogers, a host out there. And he also, speaking of the sexism and Hillary Clinton and everything, wanted to know what is exactly going to happen with the women voters. And he's got a very interesting theory on why women tend to vote democratically.
We have a lot of women in this country who get knocked up and they don't have a husband. In effect, the government becomes daddy in mm-hmm. terms of paying the bills. And that accounts, that's not all of it, but that accounts for a large part of that vote.
Yes, women vote for Democrats because they're all welfare queens, right? They all want to get the government check. Yeah, that's it. All you women out there, that's why you vote Democratic. Unfortunately, can't give you the award for that one, for lunatic fringery, but I can give you the Ronald Reagan Welfare Queen Award.
Well, we're moving on. To the east side, to a deluxe apartment in the sky.
All right, now let's go to another one of our big friends here on the Lunatic Fringery, Michael Wiener Savage. Michael Wiener Savage, who was got a call from our own caller, one of our regular callers here to the show, Ed from Chicago, called and was talking about homelessness. And this is Michael Savage's reply on how we treat homelessness.
We have a problem with the homelessness in this country caused basically by the 1996 Welfare Reform Act. Neither one of them.
You mean all the bums on in the streets would be better off if we gave them more money?
Well, what would you do? Let them spend the rest of their life sleeping on park benches?
Why not put them in work camps? Most of them are able-bodied.
How much do you plan on paying them in these work camps, sir?
Since they're already receiving public assistance, I'd pay them nothing.
So Michael Savage wants to round up the homeless and put them in slave work camps. Where have I heard that speech before? Oh, yeah, I remember. That's not a good idea. But, of course, our winner today for the Lunatic Fringe, E.D. Hill on the Fox Channel, talking about Michelle and Barack Obama's fist bump.
A fist bump, a pound, a terrorist fist jab?
A terrorist fist jab? I'm sorry, that's our winner for the Lunatic Fringe Award. A terrorist fist jab.
The Weekend Home for Truly Radical Progressives. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ.
Welcome to the weekend, fine listeners. This is the Russ Belleville Show, and I'm Radical Russ Belleville, your host, your Red State refugee, here to talk with you about our day-to-day, paycheck-to-paycheck survival in George W. Bush's America. That's right, you reached the home for truly radical progressives, the working class people who make this country worth living in and make all of the wealth in this country. Don't forget that. It's all about the workers. It's all about the people. Glad to have you here for the show. Our phone number here is 866-55-77-377. Our email address is radicalruss@gmail.com. And the website is radicalruss.com. Check them all out when you get a chance to get yourself out there on the intertubes. It'll be a lot of fun. And, of course, joining us behind the boards and across the continent, all the way in Washington, D.C., our favorite immigrant worker, Stevie Webb, is on the board. Stevie, welcome back
to the show. I'm still here. Can you believe that?
Still here. You haven't been deported yet, huh?
Not yet. Oh, God, you want to try living like this, always looking over your shoulder. It's terrifying. It really is.
Welcome to Dick Cheney's America, huh?
Seriously, I know he's watching me. I know he is. On top of his mountain of gold.
That's right. Cheney is always watching.
He is.
He's like the evil Santa Claus. Remember that Star Trek episode where they all went to the evil universe and they all had goatees?
Yes.
Just imagine Santa Claus with a goatee. That's Dick Cheney. I don't know. I'm making it up as I go here. Hey, I want to welcome you all to the show. And again, remind you that our phone number here is 866-5577-377. Coming up in our next segment, we're going to have another special interview with my homies, my boys back in the red states. We're going to have the red state update coming up here in the next segment. So stick around for that, as well as your phone calls at 866-5577-377. And let's move on to this segment of the show that we always like to get to. Oh, drat. And then it doesn't run on me. I hate it when that happens. You cue something and nothing happens.
Well, that's all right, because we've got a caller to step in for us.
Let's go to the call. Let's go to Dave in Chicago. Dave, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Hey, Russ. Nice to talk to you.
Hi, Dave.
In your Lunatic Fringe segment, you were talking about Monica Crowley. And I guess we both appreciate her, because I was listening this week, and I think I hurt myself laughing so hard. But she had one segment in particular that was just a laugh riot. Dennis Kucinich, a Democratic representative from Ohio, took the time to call into her show, and Monica Crowley interviewed him on this 35 articles of impeachment that he read on Monday night, was it?
Right.
Yeah. Went through all this rigmarole of explaining the whole thing just beautifully. He hung up, and no sooner did the phone click than Monica Crowley turned around to recap the whole situation for her listeners, you know, her genius listeners, and explained everything absolutely backwards, in reverse. It was artful. It was amazing. If you can get your hand on that piece of tape somehow, I don't know if it's like at Laura Ingraham's website, because she was in for Laura Ingraham.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
I'll have to check that out. And that was something I also wanted to mention on the show today, too, was, you know, kudos to Dennis Kucinich for getting those read. I was just flipping through the channels and flipped on C-SPAN, and there they were, you know, reading the articles of impeachment against Cheney and against Bush. And, you know, sure, it's not going to go anywhere, but just to get it read into the record to show that some of us here were paying attention, that we still believe in our Constitution, and we don't take it lightly when somebody messes with it. It was at least nice to see that happen.
Right. Oh, yeah. And on the 5-4 vote about the habeas corpus, you had that caller that you know, slam dunk that 5-4 vote thing.
Mm-hmm.
On one of our most fundamental freedoms, you know, especially if held under government scrutiny, coming from habeas corpus, a 5-4, it's shocking.
Right. It should be a 9-0.
Exactly. Thanks, Russ.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, that was the amazing thing to me. It came down 5-4. Does it blow your mind to think that it was we were just one vote away from losing a right that we've had for over 800 years? That's, you know, one vote. And this is, you know, we get to this talking about the election coming up here, and McCain has been very forthright about saying he wants to nominate more Scalitos, more Scalias, and more Alitos. I just call them Scalitos. It's all the same to me. But yeah, he wants to nominate more of those Scalito types. And next time some case comes through that like this, you know, and if McCain gets his way, those 5-4s are going to go the other way. They're going to go the other way, and we're going to lose more and more of our rights. All right, let's get to Neocon Regressives like to say that we liberals hate America first. I like to say we liberals love America most. That's why we're so disappointed in how badly regressives trash her reputation and treat her people. So today, we help our leaders focus on the plight of the little guy by taking our look at America.
feeling good.
Wow! I love America!
Somebody help me.
It's that new medication is kicking in. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, all right, enough of that.
But what I wanted to get to here in the Living in America segment here has to do with how our government is protecting us in the fight against tobacco here.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette.
Now, you may not have known, but there is a drug out there on the market called Chantix, C-H-A-N-T-I-X, because all your drugs now have to have an X in them or a Z. And this drug, Chantix, has been used for the treatment of people who have a tobacco addiction, have a nicotine addiction, trying to kick the smoking, right? And so this drug, approved by the FDA a couple years ago, May 2006, and has been fairly successful. Chantix helped 33% of smokers who used it to avoid tobacco use for 6 months, as compared to 14% that were able to quit with placebo. So, you know, 2.5, 3 times as good as taking nothing at all. So, yeah, sure, that's a good thing for a lot of those cigarette smokers who are going to overcome the negative health effects of continuing smoking. One problem. This Chantix has some pretty bad side effects. And according to ABC News, this is a story that just came out where this scientist who has been saying for a long time that they've been brushing aside the concerns about this drug, about this Chantix drug, brushed him aside and just went ahead and let the FDA go ahead and regulate and allow this drug. And we've seen this ever since the beginning of the Bush administration, and even before that when they loosened the regulations on drug advertising and such, to the point now where the drug companies are just little more than pushers with billion-dollar budgets, okay? They're drug pushers, and they're getting their drugs through the FDA. And the FDA is not standing up for us, the people. No, the FDA is standing up for these drug manufacturers. Bush and his cronies here have put in all the foxes into all the hen houses they can, including the Federal Drug Administration here, Food and Drug Administration, as far as being able to protect us from these dangerous drugs. Now, a new report has just come out on this drug from the Safe Medicine Practices that shows over 1,000 adverse event reports associated with this Chantix drug. And this report has prompted the FAA to ban the drug's use among commercial pilots, right? So it's a drug that's so bad that pilots can't be using it because it's going to mess them up. But apparently FDA thinks it's okay enough for us to take and drive our cars and do our daily chores. Now, over 6 million prescriptions have been written for this Chantix, and the FDA, when they approved this, they said that this drug could be used safely for up to 1 year. Now, unfortunately, what we found here, and this is what's being buried in the report, is that the subjects who took this drug were 2.5 times as likely to experience a severe adverse event. Now, what are we talking about, an adverse event? What's a severe adverse event? Well, in 2007, there was a report to the FDA. The FDA received 988 reports of serious injuries from people taking this drug. And among the adverse events were 224 cases of potential heart rhythm disturbances and 148 reports of vision disturbances. How many more of these drugs, like Vioxx, remember the whole thing with Vioxx that came out, and all these other drugs that are tiptoeing through the FDA, getting out, getting away with whatever drug they want to put on the market, and then only years later, after people die or are seriously injured, does anyone come back around and say, oh, look, hey, turns out this drug's not so good for you. And they find this in the evidence all the time. They find this in the FDA reports, in the trials that they lead to trying to get these drugs approved. They find these things and they squash them. They make sure nobody hears about them. They make sure you don't hear about them. So you'll go out and buy that drug and they can make their 15,000% markup on the pill. And, if a few of you die or go to the hospital, so what? It's all part of the profit and loss statement for these companies. It's all a part of profit and loss. They just figure how much would it cost to really test this drug and make sure it's safe versus how much would it cost to settle the class action lawsuits. And if the lawsuits are less, that's what they go with. They don't care about you. All right, when we come back, we're going to be talking to the guys from Red State Update, so stick around for that. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Alternative. Not too damn loud, hell.
Calm down. Hell, Jackie, this is my jam.
It's
my jam right here.
Oh, all right, man.
Yeah.
This is the Russ Belville Show.
All right, that's Jackie and Dunlap from RedStateUpdate.com. They join us here on the phone. Thanks for being here, guys. Jackie, Dunlap, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having us, Radical Russ. How you doing, Ryan Russ? Anybody ever call you just Rad Russ?
It happens sometimes.
That's pretty cool, Rad Russ, like a skateboarder.
That's right.
I think I had an issue of Thrasher, had Rad Russ on the cover. I ended up hanging up in my bedroom. Listen, I heard you talking about them drug companies.
Yeah.
That's drug testing. I don't want to come out on the side of drug companies, Lord knows, but they do test sometimes. I know I've signed up for some drug and product testing. I can make $15, $20 a session. Yeah. I mean, and they test you. They run me ragged. I'm a lot worse. I got growths on me. They give me something. It was supposed to be for hair removal. It was more of a product. It was from a cosmetic company. But my tongue swole up. Looked like a hoagie. I couldn't even close my mouth. It looked like somebody crammed a brick of pale flesh inside my mouth.
Now,
and
are you sure?
What he was saying, he tried to talk to me. He sounded like my wife. I had a stroke a few years back.
Yeah, where's the drug for that, though?
Yeah, tell me. I know, Lord knows he could use that.
Are you sure that you were getting the pharmaceutical testing and you weren't just, like, donating plasma or something?
You know what? I did kind of, I went to the bad part of town. That's where I go when I donate my plasma because they don't really run any sort of tests or have you fill anything out. They're desperate to get what they can get.
Sure.
Sometimes I wake up, you know, you're supposed to drink orange juice or cookies, but the bad side of town, they ain't got the money for that. So I usually stumble out of there. I wake up a couple days later. So those days are kind of blackouts.
Right.
I don't know what did happen.
Now, let's take a look at what's happening in the red states right now.
Sure.
You know, here over here in the blue states, especially out on the left coast here, we're getting our gas prices. The store right down the block from me is like at $4.25 right now. How are the gas prices doing out there?
Oh, they are out of control, Rad Russ. Let me tell you. We, as Americans, I can feel it swelling up. So to speak, we are not going to take it anymore.
Oh, the hell you ain't. Hell, ain't nothing nobody can do about it except cuss under the breath while they pump $75 worth of gas, take the kids back and forth to T-ball.
Jackie, you're cynical. That's cynical. Rad Russ, you tell me if I'm right.
Okay.
America's not going to sit back and get gouged by the oil companies. Jackie is not talking about America, where people take to the streets and protest.
No, I'm talking about America, where people sit on a damn couch and eat Pringles.
Look, these gas prices are wrecking families. I can't even afford to run my car to get to work.
Oh, hell, you ain't got no damn job. Hell, you ain't got a car.
With gas prices so high, damn in this economy, Rad Russ. Look, even this is how bad things are getting. Even Congress is demanding action.
Oh,
uh-oh.
I didn't know. Hey, Congress, you say? I didn't know Congress was getting involved. Hell, just sit back, America. Ain't nothing to worry about. Congress is on the job. Hell, Democrats in Congress want to make a damn windmill car. Republicans want cars that run on the pelt of endangered species. Hell.
Wait a minute. So what about Alaska? Now, we could go drill up in Alaska. That's what a lot of them saying.
Yeah, well, I guess that's all right. Don't make no difference to me if they do that. Yeah.
What you think? So you think we should drill in Alaska?
Well, yeah, I guess that's fine, yeah.
You don't like nature no more.
Oh, hell, I love nature. I love great outdoors, but I ain't ever going to go up there and look at none of that. I tell you what, if they go up there, they take a bunch of pictures of it before they tear it up for drilling and make a calendar or something, I'll buy that. Yeah,
that might be all that you'd be left with, unfortunately. Now, other things that are happening here in the political spectrum, and of course, we got to get your take on this because, you know, there was this campaign between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton working for the Democratic nomination. Looks like Barack Obama got it nailed shut there. But a lot of the folks, especially over there in Appalachian areas, red state areas there, were big Hillary Clinton supporters. What's your take on the current state of the Democratic politics?
Oh, man. Listen, where you at? You in Oregon?
Yep.
Oh, man. Listen, you remember the night that Obama won Oregon and Hillary won Kentucky, and you heard the press talking about them? Like, I mean, these differences, sure, but I mean, the way they were talking about Kentucky compared to Oregon, I mean, they kept saying Obama won Oregon, which is wealthier, well-educated, better-looking, awesome in band. And then they say Hillary won Kentucky, which, Lives in a trailer parked in his mama's yard. Is mildly retarded. Runs excitedly in circles before trips to Applebee's.
Now, look, everybody knows that there's differences between Kentucky and Oregon. Ain't no doubt about that. For example, like now, Kentucky smells like, you know, fresh blossom clover. Yeah,
yeah, and Oregon smell like patchouli and foot. Like a vegan restaurant. You smell it going down the interstate. Like, I'm either close to Oregon state line or there's a nearby Dave Matthews concert. I'm just kidding, Oregon. Don't hold this against us when our album drops on July 22nd.
That's right. There's a couple other smells coming out of Oregon, too.
That's right. I will give Oregon credit for that. That's the kind of smell I like.
But they grow a lot of that in Kentucky, I think. So there you go. That's hands across the country again.
Sure.
There.
Copperhead Road.
Exactly.
That's right. There's your Kentucky-Oregon connection. And one other thing I saw here, this was an interesting report I was taking a look at, and it had to do with this abstinence-only education for sex ed that they do for the kids in schools now. And they found that kids in lots of these schools, like in Florida, they found kids that thought that drinking Mountain Dew or a cap of bleach would prevent pregnancy. What's going on in the red states there with sex education?
Well, I remember when I was in high school, I drank a lot of Mountain Dew. Mountain Dew, Diet Mountain Dew. They got some new flavors coming out that designed by the fans. I put in one. It was kind of a meat barbecue flavor. I called it Mountain Dew meat barbecue flavor, but they didn't pick that one, you know, they were in this contest. Now, but in high school, the girls would have me go out and stand in front of the headlights of their cars when I was wearing sheer shorts. I was like, what are they doing that for? I did high school, the rumor was that Mountain Dew made your male genitalia shrink up.
Oh, hell.
And that's true.
I don't know if Mountain Dew had anything to do with that with you.
That's true. And actually, I've been, some of the product testing I've been doing was with the Mountain Dew company, and they've been trying to figure out if that was, you know, actually happening or not. As far as I can tell, it doesn't happen, but, you know, I had a lot of fun trying to get the girls to do comparison tests.
I don't know. We used to be in the South. We all grew up on a farm and that sort of thing, and I tell you, that's the best education for birds and the bees that I ever had. Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, let's let everyone know that you're Jackie and Dunlap here. We're talking to Jackie and Dunlap from Red State Update. You can check them out at redstateupdate.com, and you guys got an album coming out. Let's tell everyone about the album.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Let's go from genitalia to our album. Man, we got to get better at these radio interviews. Listen, album is called
no
How Freedom Sounds,
right.
Brad Russ.
What's that?
It's called How Freedom Sounds.
Okay.
And it sounds like me and Jackie, basically.
Yeah. It's got some good old country music in the tradition of George Jones and Tammy Wynette, Chris Gaines, yeah.
What do you think about this new country music that's out these days?
Oh, hell, new country music. I was trying to flip around the station the other day. I couldn't find nothing on it. Hell, I just live 30 miles out of Nashville, Music City. Everything, all the songs on there is women singing about how boys are cute. It's supposed to be country music. And men singing about being a good, you know, the father to the sons, being a good... that ain't kind of country music I like. I like country music about getting drunk, losing a job, or
pickup trucks.
Yeah, getting drunk, or
mama died.
Somebody dying. Hell, maybe you even killed him.
Yeah,
could have been.
Drunk and,
well, let's.
You know,
all right, guys, you got to wrap things up here. Jackie and Dunlap from RedStateUpdate.com. Thanks for joining us here on the Russ Belville Show.
Red Russ, anytime.
All right, take
thanks
it easy, guys.
Us. Yeah, thank you kindly.
Elitist. Just like any other dishwashing, burger flipping, public school educated, self employed bar band musician, National Guardsman, he's Radical Russ.
Welcome back to the show. 35 after the hour. Good to have the guys from Red State Update joining us here in the last segment. Again, check their album. It's dropping here in next month in July. You get more information on that at redstateupdate.com. And now it's time for us to get to our next segment. Every week at the Russ Belville Show, we sift through the headlines to find the stories buried in the back pages or ignored on the evening news. Stories our citizens and our leaders need to hear. In this segment, we go under the radar. All right, in my under the radar segment here today, I want to talk a little bit about religion and politics. Two things that they always say you're never supposed to talk about in polite company, but hey, it's talk radio. That's what we do. We talk about these things.
We're not that polite.
And we're not that polite. And our phone number here, by the way, if you want to talk about it, is 866-55- 877-377. And this is a subject here that really grates on my nerves, is this continuing religiosity in our political system. I mean, we saw this in the campaign, especially on the Republican side, when we had guys like Mike Huckabee saying things like this.
I have opponents in this race who do not want to change the Constitution. But I believe it's a lot easier to change the Constitution than it would be to change the Word of the living God. And that's what we need to do, is to amend the Constitution so it's in God's standards, rather than try to change God's standards so it lines up with some contemporary view of how we treat each other and how we treat the family.
Yeah, we need to amend the Constitution so it matches God's standards. And then, of course, Mitt Romney had this belief.
Freedom requires religion.
Which is a strange thing to say, and religion requires freedom is the other half of that. And then, of course, the craziest one of them all, Alan Keyes.
Governor Huckabee just addressed the question of education. He has stood before values voters and moral conservatives, claiming that he is their spokesman. You know the major problem in American education today? We allowed the judges to drive God out of our schools.
So, yeah, and he believes that without God, there is no learning. Now, I am as pro-God as the next guy, I suppose, at least in the point that everybody has the right to worship as they choose. You know, I'm a firm believer in the First Amendment, and part of that is that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And Thomas Jefferson writes about a wall between church and state, and it's been the goal of the so-called silent majority of the Nixon era to erase that line over the past, 38, 40 years. They've been doing a pretty good job about it. And this leads me to this thing, this under-the-radar story here, about the Southern Baptist Convention. Now, the Southern Baptists are the largest evangelical denomination. They got 16 million in the Southern Baptist Convention. And, of course, they're a part of the coalition that helped to elect George W. Bush twice. And the thing that scared me is they just this Wednesday, they had their convention and they adopted a resolution on political engagement, clarifying their willingness to engage in November. Part of their resolution says, quote, Christians should seek to apply their spiritual and moral values to the political process. Now, of course, the churches aren't allowed to come out and endorse any specific candidate. Wink, wink, Republicans, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. John McCain, wink, nudge, right? They can't come right out and say it, but of course, you know, it's pretty obvious who the Southern Baptists want you to support, the Republican Party. And they throw these you know, values phrases in here, these little dog whistle phrases like biblical beliefs, you know, that mean, you know, anti-abortion, anti-gay marriage, anti-gay, you know, pro-school prayer, et cetera, et cetera. And the thing that the problem that I've got with this is, you know, when they come across and they say, this is another part from their resolution, they say, quote, we strongly urge all Southern Baptists in the state of California to be informed about this issue, talking about California and the gay marriage issue, to be informed about this issue and to exercise their civic and moral duty by working diligently to support and pass this referendum. That would be the referendum that would be a constitutional amendment in California to outlaw same-sex marriage. And here's my point of this. I got no problem if the preachers want to play in the political pool. Got no problem with it. As long as they pay taxes. Let's just stop this stupid wink, wink, nudge, nudge. No, we're not telling you to endorse a candidate, wink, wink, when we all know what they're talking about. Let's just stop that and let's just tax the churches. What's wrong with taxing the churches? You want to play in the secular pool? You got to pay the secular bills. That's the way I look at it. Now, if we're talking about, you know, little country church, you know, little denomination, little country church, no. You know, we make it like small business somehow. If it's below a certain number of members of the congregation, then no, they should be exempt from taxes. But we're talking about organizations now, these mega churches that are small companies in a sense, and some not so small. I mean, we're talking about the Southern Baptist Convention having 16 million people and the amount of influence they put on our political system and the amount of money they can throw around, completely tax-free money that they can throw around, is unfair to the rest of us who also have political opinions based on our own personal morality, but we don't have a tax-exempt organization to stand up for what we believe in, do we? Right? We don't get that sort of situation. We don't get our little tax-exempt buildings where we get to get our speaker up on the pulpit and talk about these so-called values issues that everybody knows what they're talking about here in this situation. So it's time to tax the churches. Now, I know the founders had a fear of that. The founders had a fear of taxing the churches. They were afraid that if the government taxed the church, that the government could overtax the church and maybe overtax the churches they didn't like so much, and therefore government would have some control over the church. If they want to erase the line of the separation between church and state, okay, but that erases the line of no taxation for the church. If you want to get it, like I said, you want to pay the secular bills, then you can go ahead and play in the secular pool. If you want to talk about just biblical issues and stick to just teaching about morality and such and not talk about politics, then no taxes. I'm cool with that. But if this has gone on too long, and one of the things that this affects is our children. Okay, this crazy amount of religiosity that is rampaging through our political system has tangible effects on you and me, people. And one of these effects is on our children. We need only look at how the Bush administration, under its sort of faith-based sort of mindset here, has been funding abstinence-only sexual education, okay? This is, now, I brought this story up a while ago, a couple months ago in Florida, how the kids in Florida thought that smoking pot or drinking Mountain Dew or drinking a cap full of bleach would prevent someone from getting pregnant, right? And these kind of mindsets are built, they're fostered by a lack of information, a lack of real information from these kids. When all you tell them is just say no to sex, then they're going to start making up other reasons to have sex. Now, here's where it starts to get a little controversial. There is a group, and this group is called Best Friends, and it's run by a woman named Elaine Bennett. Okay, Elaine Bennett runs this Best Friends group, and they're kind of one of these abstinence-only type of groups. They put forth a $550,000 grant to go about spreading their abstinence-only message across the country. Turns out, they got twice that. The Bush administration gave them twice the amount of money they asked for. They ended up getting $1.1 million. Now, how did that happen? Well, first of all, Elaine Bennett is the wife of Bill Bennett. You remember Bill Bennett, the former education secretary in the Reagan administration and the values guy, you know, the virtues guy, you know, the one with the big gambling habit, the $8 million gambling habit in Vegas? Yeah, that guy. His wife's in charge of that organization. But wait, it gets better. She's also close personal friends with the chief administrator of the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention, J. Robert Flores. And Flores, in order to get her that $1.1 million grant, just created an entirely new category under the guidelines so that would just fit her organization so he could funnel $1.1 million to them. Now, this also, of course, hurts our kids. The Centers for Disease Control have shown that these kids that that take these abstinence-only pledges and get this abstinence-only education, by the time they reach 18, 70% of them have engaged in oral sex, and more than 45% have had intercourse at least once. Right? So the abstinence-only has been proven many, many times not to work. And yet, because of the religious aspects of the Bush administration and this whole just say no, sex is bad attitude, we have spent $1 billion in federal aid to pour into our states to run state-run abstinence-only programs. Now, the states don't have to take this money, but of course, if they don't teach abstinence-only, they don't get the money, right? If they talk about condoms, if they talk about safer sex, they talk about reality, they don't get the money. Only three states have refused the money. California is one of them, Maine and Pennsylvania the other. And here's some hard numbers on this. California, having pushed the progressive approach, you know, teaching kids about contraceptions and condoms and the real data about sex, pregnancy rates went down in California 46%. They had the second greatest decrease in pregnancy rates of 46%. Now, compare that to Texas, a state that does the abstinence-only thing. They only declined by 19%. That was the second lowest decline. So we're finding in the states that give the kids the real information, it reduces STDs, it reduces teen pregnancy, and yet because of the religiosity of the Bush administration, this is the kind of education our kids are getting.
You got to know all the tricks. Like, for example, if a woman's on top, she can't get pregnant. It's just gravity.
Well, that's true. Everyone knows that.
What goes up must come down.
Yeah, so that kind of information is what's going to our kids. Time to end the religious link between politics and religion in our country. I'm Radical Russ. We're coming back with one more segment. Your listener emails coming up in the next segment. Stay tuned. This is the Russ Belville Show. Good heavens, Miss Sakamoto, you're beautiful. Welcome
Science!
Back. Welcome back to the show. It's 51 after. We're just wrapping things up here, and I just want to remind everyone listening here that the Russ Belville Show is the little engine that could. We are completely independent. No corporate support. We're not a part of any network. We're just me and Stevie here chunking away on a Saturday.
It's true. Trying to, that's it.
That's it. It's just me and Stevie, literally. So you can help us. Please, please help us and advertise on the Russ Belville Show. You can just send me an email, radicalrus@gmail.com, and advertise your product on the Russ Belville Show. Help support fledgling talk radio, I guess we could call
That's right. And we are broadcast all over the country.
And on two countries. We're in Canada, too.
Are we in Canada as well?
Canada does count as a country.
Vive la différence.
All right. Well, it's the end, getting toward the end of the show here. And like I say, you can send me emails at radicalrus@gmail.com. But remember, we like to go through our listener emails in this last segment of the show.
Bloody Vikings.
Bloody Vikings.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm
no,
okay.
No, you're not a lumberjack.
Sorry.
You can take the guy out of Britain, but you can't take the Britain out of the guy. That's right. All right. Our first email comes from a repeat emailer. This is Douglas, who emailed me last 2 weeks ago. He told me I was a nasty little man.
Yeah.
And he probably isn't listening now, so we'll read this email from him. He replied to me to say, quote, "You seem to have your mind made up on every argument a bit too fast for me, as I have observed since listening to your show from its beginning. I find it simply no longer worth the rise in blood pressure to listen to people who always have a perspective and approach to others that they have the ultimate correct view." Well, that's talk radio, man. that's every host on talk radio.
Just chuck your wireless receiver set out the window, Douglas, and have a cookie.
So he goes on to say, "Maybe you just have a better or different perspective of the Clinton campaign. However, it seems to me hiring a politician, this would be Obama, with a dozen or so years of state legislative experience and barely 1 year in the U.S. Senate before he starts running for president is not exactly what I would call a fully vetted candidate for the grave situation right now to avoid a meltdown of noble heritage the U.S. was built on for the first 200 plus years." Okay, first of all, talking about Obama not being fully vetted and, you know, in comparison to Hillary Clinton, I have two words, Monica Lewinsky. How many times during the nominating process for the Democrats did you hear anybody bring up Monica Lewinsky or the fact that if Hillary won, she would be working in the office where her husband did the, well, you know, stained our reputation, let's say. Okay? That could have been a club to beat up Hillary Clinton like crazy with, and nobody used it. You want to talk about fully vetted? Let's talk about where Bill Clinton's been making his money for the past 8 years. And let's talk about the guy, Ron Burkel, he's been flying around with on private jets with. That's why Hillary Clinton won't be a vice presidential nominee. Bill Clinton can't take the vetting. And on that experience issue, the experience of Obama, where he says he's barely a dozen years as a state legislature, barely 1 year in the Senate before he runs for president, and we have such grave circumstances. Did you consider the Civil War to be a grave circumstance? Did you consider the state of the Union in the 1850s, 1860s, when there was open rebellion between the South and the North? Was that a grave circumstance? Because I do believe we did elect a state senator from Illinois who barely had 1 year in the U.S. Senate, and he seemed to handle that whole Civil War situation pretty well. Yeah, that's right. Barack Obama's got as much experience as Abraham Lincoln had, okay? So the whole experience argument just does not wash with me. Now, Janet in Oregon here writes to me. Janet says, I heard this morning there's a group coming together calling themselves Democrats Voting for McCain in November. I think they should rename themselves Self-Loathing Democrats of a Certain Age Voting for McCain. And she says, what do we need? Another 4 years of Bush and Cheney, thanks to the bitter Hillary Dems. Yeah, that was a concern I had, too, when I started hearing all these Hillary Clinton supporters talking about, you know, well, it's been so unfair. We're not going to vote for Barack. We'll vote for John McCain. which is crazy, of course. We're talking about John McCain, who's going to bring in more justices like Scalia and Alito, and most likely over, and who believes, who's openly said he believes Roe v. Wade should be overturned. A guy who didn't support minimum wage increases, which affect women much more than it affects men. A guy who didn't support the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act that would have raised the pay of women equal to men. All sorts of things that are anti-woman, McCain stands for, but yet in a peak, in a fit of just anger and spite, these people say they're going to vote for McCain. I have one thing for you to read. I don't have time to go over it now, but check out counterpunch.org, and search for something called Your Whiteness is Showing, okay, by Tim Wise. Your Whiteness is Showing, because he outlines it perfectly, that these women, these older white women who are saying they're not going to vote for Barack Obama, you know, some for some reason, they had no problem holding their nose and voting for John Kerry or Al Gore if their candidate didn't make it, and they voted for Bill Clinton. You know, talk about someone who you know, may have had a problem with treating women with respect, right? They were willing to hold their nose for all those guys going back to Dukakis, but they can't hold their nose and vote for Barack Obama. Does it have anything to do with him being a black man? Is that the problem? That you'd rather vote for John McCain, a white man who stands against everything you believe in, you'd rather vote for him than vote for Barack Obama. Your whiteness is showing. Now, there's another email I got here, Carl in Tigard, Oregon, who emailed me. He said that the Bill Clinton turned his back on Gore when Gore was running for president in order to set up his wife to run for president. And I said to myself that if she runs, someone is going to pay the Clintons back for what they did to Gore. Well, that's an interesting thought. I don't know if there's anything purposeful in that, but yeah, it's a good point, because Bill Clinton did kind of sabotage. But you know, you gotta put some on Al Gore too. Gore was trying to run away from the whole Monica Lewinsky thing and kind of put his distance between Clinton and himself. So it's not all Clinton's fault. And finally, I've got Ron from Beaverton, Oregon, a former coworker of mine in my alter ego day job life, and he writes: Will Cheney ever be exposed for mailing the anthrax? I'm not a big conspiracy theory guy, but come on. Can anyone just walk off with U.S. weaponized anthrax without the government knowing about it? Was Cheney behind the anthrax? I don't know, but I want to know who was behind. You remember that? We had anthrax mailed to our senators and to the news media, and nothing's ever happened of it.
Yeah.
Good questions, and we'll try to tackle those when we get to the next show.
Who sent the anthrax, and who shot Biggie?
Who shot Biggie? That's right. It's probably both Dick Cheney. All right. Well, we got to wrap things up here for the show. Thanks for joining us. For Stevie Lee here behind the boards, I'm Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next weekend at the same time on the same channel. Take care of yourselves, America.